Welcome to Paradigm Shifters. I'm Veronica Entwistle. I'm an intuitive and energy counselor and have been doing these interviews, my gosh, since 2008, and have brought forward in my own awareness anyway a number of people who are doing cutting edge work with consciousness on this planet. And that is such an exciting subject, and today is no less exciting. We have Richard Newton with us. Richard Newton is a Tellington Touch horse healer, I'll call it that, but he's many, many other things. His Tellington Touch experiences was kind of a topping on a whole series of things that you did. Welcome to the show, Richard, and then I'll ask you more about your background.
Great. Thank you.
Welcome, welcome. And one of the reasons I know you is because we have some mutual friends who recently lost a horse, and you were working on that horse, and I was from another perspective, and I was very impressed by what you did and what you were able to do. So let's get talking about all of it, all in a minute, right?
Oh, yeah.
You're obviously from England, you are.
Pardon?
You're obviously from England.
Yes, I am from Liverpool originally. I've lived here now 30 plus years. And yeah, I was doing corporate stuff in England. I'm also a farmer's son, so I grew up around animals, but they were more of a means to an end back then, you know, because they were just there rather than having a real connection with them. And it took me to do my master's in Chicago in theater. And I've just graduated and I'm walking out of the L station and I hear my mother's voice in my head saying, you've got to take care of the horses first. The theater will follow. And I,
yeah, wonderful. Huh?
And I can feel a horse. I'm leading a horse on either side of me as I step up the steps. And I'm thinking, well, that's new. What am I supposed to do with horses? I haven't touched a horse probably for 30 years at this point. Even though I've kept...
But you did used to ride them, didn't you?
Not that much. I wasn't that connected. And I also didn't realize I didn't have a core back then. So I was not exactly very safe on a horse. So then I realized what I'd missed as far as, well, what am I going to do with horses? And this came about by... seeing those different types of therapies have come through. You could do horse massage. You could do others, even acupressure, which is acupuncture without the needles. And I was told that when I groomed a horse, because I started out here working at rehab ranches, that I was doing way more than any normal person was doing. And I just said, well, it was probably because I'm using a bit more elbow grease. And I left it.
What was it? Drug rehab? Is that kind of rehab?
No,
you
this
were
was this,
in,
oh, this was for horse rehab. You know, rescues who had been,
Okay.
been abused, and well, we don't know what sort of a life they'd had. And slowly but surely, I realized it was energy, and it was in my hands. And I discovered equinology, which was where I did my horse massage training, and then I. Came, which was very sort of pre-med and very scientific. And then you've got the other arm of Linda Tellington Jones, which was way more sort of intuitive, and which is really my way. You know, that's my more natural bent, as it were. But I needed the technical side and the muscles and the nomenclature to talk to a veterinary surgeon. And so that's how the package came together. And by about, it was about 2009, I was like this very green, but I had the horse sense because I'd grown up around them, which made a big difference. And now that horse sense came into play big time, and the horses felt comfortable around me. And of course, I wasn't riding them at this point. So it was, that's how I came back to it. And I would volunteer at a couple of places to get my my hours up and had to write all up what I found, et cetera, and how, the horse could be improved upon in its riding, et cetera. I don't want to waffle too long.
Well, no, it's really interesting. So you got into sort of communicating with them in terms of being a rider or a trainer of people who could ride.
Yes.
But then actual communication, when did that begin?
I think it started relatively, probably within a year. Because one horse teaching me, one day I'm just sort of playing. You know how when we play, we discover, and we don't do that enough. And
I agree with you.
I was just running my hands along the spine. I had the one arm along the spine and the other along the belly line. And I'd look at the horse, and the horse wasn't really minding. And then I'd find a point, top or bottom, and the horse would just lock as if I'd hit something. And they'd go have this faraway look. And then they'd start licking and chewing, and I'm going, wow, that must be something quite effective. So I kept moving down the belly line, and I found another sort of lock. And I didn't think any more of it. And the horse did downward dog in the cross ties, which anyone that knows horses and cross ties, that was quite an achievement. And I thought, wow, I must have done something. Anyway.
So what are cross ties?
The cross ties in most barns, they hold the side pieces of the halter so the horse can be supported on either side, and they're fixed. So you take the lead rope off, and you just let them hang out in the cross ties, and you can groom them, or you can wash them, or untack them up, or have a vet visit. So that's the cross ties, and it likes to, they get to, they can't run anywhere per se. Well, not on purpose. they want to get away. That's a different issue. I would get, even in yoga, my first actual message was in Shavasana in yoga on a Friday afternoon, and it was a famous racehorse called Lost in the Fog, and he'd been diagnosed with, inoperable cancer of the spleen. And this communication came through, said, I'm not ready to go yet, because I'd read in the paper they were going to, he was going to cross the Rainbow Bridge the following week. And I'm a Brit here. And it was sort of, of a certain era, you don't sort of invade people's privacy. And I'm thinking, well, I know the owner is local, San Francisco. And so I didn't do anything. This is the Friday. Come the Sunday afternoon, there's this real critic on my shoulder. Well, aren't you going to ring him up? Aren't you going to do anything about this? You know how we get. And so I went through the days of Yellow Pages and found a phone number. I wasn't sure it was the right one. Anyway, I took the plunge, and I get this very polite lady on the other end. And I'm going, is this so-and-so? Is this the same, ownership of Lost in the Fog? And she went, yes. I said, well, I really need you. I said, you don't know me, but I've had this message. I can briefly explain what I do, and that the horse is not ready to move on yet. He hasn't said his goodbyes. And she just nodded politely. Well, that's what I felt she was doing, and she was just doing lip service, really. So I thought, well, I've gone that far. Well, blow me down. A new cancer drug had just been released, as I understand, and they were going to give it a try. So he did get about 3 weeks respite, I think. The drug didn't really have any effect, in the long term. And then I read.
But his owner gave you the opportunity to keep him alive.
Exactly. Something happened. Enough happened for them to store his passing. And then I wrote to him afterwards, and I got this lovely card back. And he wrote on the back, you know, thank you for your kindness. And we did everything we could for him. And, you know, really a lovely note to a person he didn't even know. And that was that. So that was, and then I had another racehorse who was going through awful colic issues. And again, in yoga, and he just came back with, yeah, they're beep, beep, beeping. I'm being polite here with my diet. And he came through eventually, but I sent him Reiki, distant. Mm-hmm. You know, he said yes, because you always respect them and ask them, would you like this? And you get a yes or a no back through the ethers, as wild as that sounds. And so that's
pretty exciting for wild,
you know, and to hear that they get well. I know that I'm not there 24/7, but it was a contribution, put it that way, to their healing or to their journey. Because I feel I've known some of these horses that I now know in this lifetime. I've known them before in other lifetimes, and which is quite fascinating too. You know, that you'll.
And do you get really big pictures of having been with them in other lifetimes? Do you get visuals?
I do get visuals. I walked into one horse at Stanford who was part of their team horse network. For the students, and I just looked at him and I went, wow, I've been to war with you. And the horse knew, and it was like bam. And by the time I'd work on him, he would take me back to that time. That's just,
wow,
you know. So I, wow. When I finished, I would feel, wow, I totally got an understanding for serial killers, really, of how they're focused. You know, it's like my way or the byway. There's no gray matter here, no gray ground, no middle ground. And ultimately, I found a lady shaman who actually, she worked with both of us to heal both of us of that situation. So when he finally moved on to another barn, our journey was complete, and we were both healed from that time.
Mm-hmm. So it was a vengeful getting to know, was it?
It was a, and it was sort of like it was part of our journey, you know, that we would meet up in this lifetime. Because I'm a firm believer in this lifetime, we're back to heal past relationships, past karma, whatever. And in whoever we meet or whomever we meet along the way. And there's a set period of time sometimes, you know, that it may be 6 months, it may be 5 years until we've done what we can do within that relationship, whether it's a dog, cat, bird, horse, person. That's how I feel.
And did you find, you came out of your drama course and began to, and when you heard from your mother and all that, did you find that you had a new kind of love for these animals? Did you find a love emerging or an awakening?
A totally different experience from when I was in my teens. Totally. I'd got this so much compassion for them. And you know, they weren't just beasts of burden that had to be fed and watered. They were sort of living, breathing beings, which was amazing, you know? That was a very, I was like, whoa, this is a whole new ball game, you know, to life.
Hmm.
And how they were,
and when,
sorry, I didn't mean to chop you off.
Oh, no, I just wanted to check when you unhooked from this other horse from that having gone to war together, did you feel a real shift in yourself? I mean, that healing was a healing for you as well.
Yes. Yeah, because I'd also, in that year, I'd been in Scotland and I'd actually gone to Bannockburn, which is, you know, famous battleground. And
Sure,
I
yeah.
stood on the turf and everything just came back to me. So that sort of also got healed in that, that sort of battleground mentality. And I also walked away from them like it was very single-minded. Don't mess with me, or I'll chop your hand off. It's that.
Oh,
But no,
wow.
seriously, that's how strong the emotions were. And I knew then that
Wow.
that had to be, taken care of in some way. And so Solomon,
Wow.
who's this horse that I mentioned, big gray guy, you can imagine him pulling a cannon. He was big and square and very sensitive. And he also, when he didn't move to another barn, I still had connection with him because he was actually a gatekeeper for horses that were moving across to their own rainbow bridge, like back
Wow,
to their own
really.
horse consciousness. And he would show up in my living room in spirit, obviously, and he'd bring a horse that I knew that had been passed on, who had also passed on, and they were annoyed with me, to say the least, because I hadn't stepped in to try and save them because they weren't ready to go. And I had to, again, with a big heart, say, "Look, I can't save all of you. That's not my, purview." And where you were, they didn't have the resources to help you heal, per se, or, when they get affected with laminitis. In that situation, it's a really expensive recovery. And rehab, therapy, horse therapy barns don't have the resources, and they have to,
Right.
and it's not a judgment call, it's just how it is.
Well, that must have been hard for you to take the rap
Yeah, and
for.
then I'd say, "Look, this is all I can offer." I said, "I can talk to, I can go and see them. It's something to put on my little notice board of how can we change this." And then they'd show up a week and I'd send them lots of love, always lots of love. And then they'd show up a week later and they'd like got through their hurt and their frustration and their anger, and that they were okay with where they were and they were moving on in their spiritual life.
So that's your actually what you're saying is we create karma with animals and don't realize it sometimes, right? And you're
Oh yes.
healing a lot of that.
Oh yes. And of course, I
That's a
couldn't say
pretty
anything
interesting
to the
subject.
owners. The owners were not that approachable, to say, I not to call them up and say, "Hey, I met your horse today."
I've been talking to your horse, yeah.
So yeah, it's
Well, had you been a psychic before that? You hadn't, had
not
you?
really, no. Not at all. I mean, I had good intuition, but not in this vein. So,
So it's like it just bulged out of you and became an operative language, hey?
and I think the horses unconditionally, regardless of where we're at in any one day, they're always working on us. They're always trying to improve our spiritual side and make it more heart coherent. So they're wanting to take us out of reaction and into thinking. And that's something with the Tellington and touch work. It's about taking you out of reaction and into thinking, so you get the heart and the brain to actually work together. And so you choose what you're going to say versus, just blah, 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 and then you bury yourself in a bigger hole. Yeah.
So how long how like so then you jump into Tellington Touch, is that it? You're already working with animals, or not animals, I say horses,
Yeah,
right?
at this point. But I'd get dogs walk up to me and like sit on my feet with a an often a grumpy owner on the end of the leash. And they'd say, well, he doesn't like men. I thought, well, I don't want to say anything here, but I think, well, I think I'm a man, and he's quite happy sat on my feet. Like as if to say, I need you. I know what you do. I know you can help me. And I do like 5 minutes of work, whatever the gods sent me in that time. And the lady would say, well, the vets just told me he could do with some energy work, and I would hand my card, but I'd never hear from them again. You know, but that was it. But that was part of my journey. And the dog, for also, he'd get up and shake, or she'd get up and shake like dogs do, and go, I like this.
So you think it's kind of a frequency that's in you that attracts them, so they know it's like an alphabet or a language that says.
I think it's our vibration too. It's, you know, our vibrations are being raised all the time, whether we feel it or hear it, is a different matter. And I think the animals are far more in tune with the land than we are, and with nature. And so they pick up on those rhythms.
Wow. It's really interesting. I saw a coloring of a horse that you did. And it was really talking about vibrational. It was very vibrational, all these amazing colors in it. And I think this is a man who understands vibration. That's what I thought.
Well, thank you.
So you went into Tellington Touch after that, did you?
Yeah, well, I did. I completed my training with the massage, which you can't just sort of, you know, sign up and it's done in a week. You know, it's sort of like anything.
Oh, no, really?
Yeah. like anything that's hands-on. And which for me was more challenging than the Tellington Touch work, because I had to read a book and I had to follow a set system. Well, anyone that knows me knows that's not how I work. I'm sort of, I just, okay, God, where do you want to guide? Where do I want to start here? Or I'll say to the horse now, where do you want me to start? And the horse will give me its rump or its shoulder. And then we do this dance together, because then they get to release in their time, not in human time. You know, so every horse I visit or every being I visit, I'm looking at where they're at in that moment. Because as you know, every day we get up, we're not always in the same bright and sparkly mood. And the horse...
No, that's for sure.
And so we have to see where they're at. And, you know, and if it's really, really hot like it was here this week, and one horse who at 9 o'clock was pandering to me to come and work on him by noon, oh, I'll just take the energy. I don't need you touching me. And so they just took the Reiki. He just took the Reiki. And I stood outside the stall and sent him Reiki, and I could see him relaxing and go, oh, without the, you know, getting him even hotter.
What part of your journey did you take Reiki? Was it earlier did the drama class? Or?
Reiki happened when I was in grad school, and I did bits of it and realized I had Reiki done on me. And then I naturally went towards, I didn't do the actual attunements till I came back west from Chicago. So, and again, your body has to integrate this stuff. So it's a bit like bringing you back to the Tellington Touch work. That has to get into your system and integrate it into your system. So it actually is working on you at the same time as it's working on the horse.
So it's awakening you to more and more of being an energy being.
Yeah. And also, once we start down this path, you can't really stop the floodgates, because the whole thing is like, oh, I don't want to deal with that today. Well, you're going to have to deal with it. You know, I mean, even doing assistant directing in theater, I'd see a scene on stage going, wow, this is my childhood, you know, and I'd have to go through it and feel it. And then about halfway through the rehearsal process, it was like, oh, I'm done now. It's gone.
And so that would free you from some trapped emotion
Yeah.
or some trapped programming.
Yep.
So it's the same thing. It's kind of metaphor or parallel, isn't it?
Yes, it sort of had its own sort of type of therapy, but in a different way. It was more of an intellectual thing, reading somebody had written how it was an Indian play, and Britain was their overseers for a century or whatever, and there's a lot of that Britishisms in there and how these kids were being raised, and there I was seeing my own family right in front of me, and how I was treated. It was very like, oops, and I have to keep going through this rehearsal while I'm dealing with this, so that I can't deal with that right now, but I'm going to admit that it's hitting some buttons here.
And now you're not Indian,
No,
right?
I'm a Brit. I'm an Anglo-Saxon. I know I've had Native American experiences, but I don't know whether, according to Ancestry, there's no Native American connection, but I feel it and have witnessed it again through the horse.
Well, and the only reason I asked you that question is because, as you know, racism is a big
Oh.
subject these days, and finding the oneness of us, the shared, whether it's trauma or emotional drive or consciousness, whatever, it's sharing it. So that's why I brought you
No,
back to
that's
that.
I'm
Yeah.
thank you. No, it's
Yeah. Well, thank you for all you're doing. Wow.
and there is a huge raven just coming to talk to me. It's like looking at
Right now?
yes, looking at me, yeah,
Perfect.
and looking at me going, wah, wah, wah.
And how do you interpret ravens?
Well, I have a lot of connection with crows, but I haven't actually knowingly come across ravens that much. So I'm, yes, and he's like looking at me. Well, what would you want me to
Wow.
say, Mr. Raven? And you know what he's saying? We are all one.
What? Ah, well, that's what we're talking about right there.
The
Wow.
chills are going,
I love
yes,
this.
the chills are going through me as I say it.
Isn't that marvelous? Yes. The raven is really a speaker of that, isn't
Yeah.
he? Life and death
Yeah.
or the cellular
And
journey.
the track
Wonderful.
connecting of the ancestors. Ah, there we go. Connecting with the ancestors and bringing us messages from the spirit world.
I love that. Of course, I love that anyway. But actually, but as I speak with you, or as we all speak with you, it's interesting because you're someone whose journey is all about bringing the various levels of being a person into function and into being able to understand them. I could sort of see it like this amazing flow that's been going on probably for lifetimes in you.
Yes,
Does
in
that make sense?
fact, yeah, it totally makes sense. But I'm this time I really get being a steward this time around. I don't need to. I used to dream as a child of having a racing stable, but I think it was always more from a healing perspective. That the horses would do what they wanted to do versus what we think they should do. And I remember having a conversation with a racehorse who's longer or in one of his lifetimes, and he would say, we don't need a trainer. We need someone to fill in the boxes and do the paperwork, but we love to run. That's what we want to do, so we don't need to be trained to do it. I know this will raise some hackles in some circles, but they connect through that, and then when they're ready to run, then we'll run, in a race.
Well, that's interesting because I'm fascinated about what would happen if, for example, we raised children to be true to their sole purpose.
Yeah,
And that sounds like
oh,
it's kind of a similar.
that would be amazing. Because,
Yeah, but isn't it
oh,
similar?
big time, big time. I mean, how many people in our lifetimes have not even got to their sole purpose. God loves them. You know, I just feel so humbled and honored that I'm doing this work, that I've actually, I don't want to say listen, because that sounds very glib, but that I found myself trusting. When I first came to the States, I came here as a tourist, and I was in Texas first, which was a real culture shock. And then
shock is good for waking us up, isn't it?
Well, it was. And I came to San Francisco, to the Bay Area, to stay with people who I'd only met once, who invited me here. And my gut, as soon as I landed at SFO, my gut just like went thump, like as if to say, this is where you're meant to be. And I got a green,
wow,
I got a job, a green card, and a place to live all within like 5 months of being here.
Wow.
Yeah.
How long ago was that,
Richard? That was in 1991.
Wow. And you're still here.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Still doing great work.
And following, you know, when I ended up going to undergrad here. And again, that was sort of like, I'd walk into a theater and realize it was like a college. And I did Christmas Carol there. And the head of theater said, well, when are you going to come to school here? And that was, you know, I didn't knowingly go looking to go to school at all. Mm-hmm. It just was like part of the path. And so when I meet like 19 and 20 year olds, I say, look, it doesn't matter that you don't do it at 19 and 20. You know, life has so much. When I came back at 40 to do undergrad, I wanted to be there. You know, it was like filling all these jigsaw puzzle pieces, like slotted in, you know, with life experience and into the classroom.
Was your mother still alive?
My mother was still alive then. She came to graduate for the undergrad. And see her, she'd been raised in, you know, really Edwardian Britain, and very strictly, and where little boys were to be seen and not heard, and that you'd learned everything at 18. You know, when you left school, that was it. Mm. You know, nothing wrong with that, but that's how she couldn't believe at 40 why I was going back to school.
But she's the one who nudged you to hear the horse.
Oh, yeah,
right?
But I think that was more from an intuitive angle, not from a scholarly angle. Her gifts were well buried in the intuitive, because I think she actually asked me one day when I was about 13 or 14, did I have gut feel? So,
oh, really?
Yeah, okay. Like in the 60s, she's asking me, well, do you have gut feel? And I said, and I asked her to explain it. And I said, yeah. And I said, and if I read something or somebody comes up and tells me this is the thing to do and my gut says no, I don't do it. And she says, good. And that was the end of that conversation.
Wow. So she was kind of a good mom as far as your soul purpose
went.
Yeah.
She got, and I think my father.
She got some direction going for
you. Oh, God,
yes.
Very much so.
So let's get to the Tellington Touch. That's quite an interesting system.
Yes.
How did you jump into that? Was that through undergrad or?
No, you'll laugh. I just finished my Equinox. I actually was just out of graduate school in Chicago, and I come back here and I read about it and I talk to the office, the Tellington Touch office, and next minute I'm on a plane to Boston to do my class of Tellington Tea Touch with Linda Tellington Jones. I mean, I was, you know, like lamb to the slaughter. If, you know, but my gut just says go. Don't worry what other people think. Yeah. Just go. And
oh, no, you were being brought into the fold sort of thing,
big
weren't
time.
You?
And I was a bit sort of, I was still very, not as garrulous as I am now. You know, I was really still quite quiet. And so, and I was frightened of doing things wrong. That's another British trait that's not one of our most best traits. You know, that sort of, don't learn from experience. You've got to do it right and don't do it wrong.
Or else the spirit, yeah. Except you are from Liverpool, and we know some really amazing people
Well,
that came from there.
yeah, and that's what throws a lot of people now. Lots of people, I mean, people of your era never went anywhere. Hilde actually said that, you know, that if you were born in Liverpool, you weren't going anywhere. I said, well,
Wow, isn't that remarkable? And those of us over here just think Liverpool, think
yeah,
Beatles, right?
exactly. And look, look
Liverpool.
what they did. You know, they met up with a producer who actually trusted them. Because George Martin, he was a total classically trained guy. So to be confronted with the Beatles and all their, totally different music style and a whole new music genre, really.
Incredible innovation.
Yeah, exactly. And when I even just with Love, Love Me Do, and he said, this was a dirge until I speeded it up. You know, it was just so simple.
Sometimes when we're restricted for quite a while, maybe Liverpool was, I don't know, then what happens is we fight our way out and it becomes more expressive than it would have been otherwise. I guess it's like a smelter or something.
Yeah, and I think we had. I left home when I was 18, so my first job was at a on a stud farm in Ireland. But we digress. We're not getting around to the tea touch work.
It's interesting because one of the things we're talking about whether it's about horses or about people, we're talking about that soul journey that will not be stopped if you give it a little bit of
Whoa.
recognition. So I appreciate that.
Yeah.
So let's get on to the tea touch. I'm excited about that.
So, yes, I went to Boston. And it was a 5-day clinic. So I was a fairly, majority women. I thought, wow, I'm the only guy here, or there may be another guy here. And it was literally full immersion. And came away, and I'm on the plane with like a sinus headache coming back, and I start doing the T touch. I start doing the little circles all around my temples and my eyes and over my nose. And I'm like discovering all of how our faces are connected, how all the musculature works. And just by the touch, it's just like clearing stuff. Yeah,
Wow.
so that was that. I did 10 minutes on the plane and went, okay, this works.
Isn't that remarkable? And this is a 5-day course,
Yeah,
that's
that's
all,
right.
right?
Yep. And it was crammed with lots of esoteric stuff and scientific stuff too. And to learn that our nerves, when they're cut, actually inherently know how to rejoin. Regardless.
Oh, they
Yes.
do.
Yeah. There's a guy called, I think, from what I remember, Sir Charles Sherrington, and I'm trying to think of the name of the book, but she read that book when she was doing her initial research and training. And when she read about the cells could rejoin. So that's what gave her that connection. That's, well,
And, but is the touch itself, is it like at a very poignant or just an amazing intersection of nerves?
No, it's just,
Is that what she
it's
learned?
activating. If I do a circle, if say you could imagine doing, think of a clock face and place your fingers or a finger, whatever works for you, on your cheekbone. And imagine that clock face starting at 6 p.m. And it doesn't matter which way you go, counterclockwise or clockwise. And you go through a full circle. So you go back through the six. Say we go from 6 to 9 to 12. So imagine the clock face as you're moving your fingers around the clock face. So you're going to do a circle and a quarter. So start at 6, go through 9, 12, 1, 3, 6, and then go to 9 and just do a gentle lift. This is very, very light. Very, very light. We're so raised to be heavy-handed. It's got to be heavy. This is like you can actually imagine doing it. So the imagining the clock face is using one side of your brain, because you've got the numbers. And then the actual touch is using the other side of the brain. So that's the basic secret of it. Not that it's a secret, but and you just do that, and it's very slow. And also remember to breathe in and out, which is part of this whole thing, because we don't breathe enough.
No, we don't.
So this is
wow.
Yeah. So try that on your own. You know, anybody can try.
I will.
And it and you can do.
Let's.
Sorry, you can do it with your whole hand. It's you know it's and it's and think
like a flat hand.
Yeah,
a flat
or
hand.
Mold the hand into your jaw and just use the tips of your fingers and just imagine doing like the clock face on the tips of your fingers. I mean, I'm making this very simplistic, but to me, it's such a nurturing, closeted action. That our bodies go back to that childhood when we were cosseted, you know, when we had swaddling clothes around us. Not that we remember it.
Or we're talking about the healing of soothing.
Yes.
Which is something we don't think about very often.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah, so
this
it,
is great.
Yeah, and that's just a very, that's the tip of the iceberg of the whole process, but that's the basic. And at the end,
wow.
End of your show, I'll do a heart hug demo across the airwaves and your listeners.
What is a heart hug?
A heart hug is a basic, if you imagine putting your hands together over your heart and again doing a circle, just gently moving the skin around in the circle of the clock face and doing the 1 1/4. And either breathe in before you start doing the circle, and then when you finish it, you breathe out, or however it works. But practically, your breath will take over instead of us just holding our breath. And will bring really make you bring you back into your body if it's out of it, you know, or focus you better, improve your focus. So you're actually feeling... Oh, wow. I'm not.
Well, I'm going to practice that.
Yeah. It's a very, I mentioned in one of the classes I taught of doing that when I'm stuck in traffic. And I'm going, what would Linda do? And she said, heart hug. And I'm, what? And I'm getting mad because I'm going to be late. You know how all that builds in the drama. And I like to, okay, well, I'll do the heart hug. And then all of a sudden, I'm back in my body. I'm actually praying for the traffic to move instead of getting mad at it. And all of a sudden, the traffic disappears and I actually arrive on time. And I'm not all, you know, in a doodah because I was late. You know, yeah, it's so
wonderful.
Yeah,
well,
we get the choice. Not, I don't necessarily, I'm this plaster saint and do it every time, but...
you're not.
No, sorry.
Well, let's go back into the animals before we lose you. I want to hear some more about them, although the heart hug, well, what you've taught us so far is actually very helpful. But let's jump to animals and see. Do you work both with animals and people? Is
yeah,
that something?
And I've had Yeah, I used to be a sidewalker at a therapy center.
Okay.
A sidewalker is a person who stands to the left or the right to check that a autistic child, for instance, doesn't fall off while riding a horse. So you're leading the horse, like it was a leading rein. And I would start, because animals talk in pictures. So sometimes I'll get a connection, a whole picture, like a fast run movie of like 2 or 3 seconds, and it will have the whole reason why there's an injury here, or they're telling me something. And also, the more sort of higher, not educational, what's the word I need here? The higher...
consciousness training?
Yeah, they talk in pictures too. Because they don't necessarily understand verbal cues. And this one day, this child realized I read like the horse read, and he started sending me his fears when a dog showed up running around the back of a horse. And the picture was of the horse rearing up and the kid sliding off the back. And of course, once I had the eye contact and he like hanging on to me, and of course, then it was inappropriate because the child was hanging on to me. And, you know, in the world of therapy, and that's, I can't disagree in a way, but I had to step away from doing that because I couldn't prove it, you know, and how litigious we have become.
Yeah, that's pretty scary, isn't it? Especially that subject.
I shared it with a couple of therapists who sort of get me. And they went, oh, that's interesting. I said, yeah, so I'm not going to do that anymore because I don't want to get myself in a hole. But that's something for later in life when it's more acceptable. Who knows, you know, whether it'll be acceptable in this lifetime. But that's what happened there. That was one of those things. I'm not, yeah.
Did the child fall off the horse or were you able to?
Fall off, but that's what his fear was, which he triggered to me. Through a visual, you know, I just got this rearing horse with him on the back and coming off, and it may have been a past lifetime too that it happened.
And you don't have to know because you react at the time appropriately.
Exactly.
Right?
So it was those are.
Does it?
Go on, sorry.
Does it actually affect autism to do that? And that's a whole other subject, and I don't want to digress that far, but just a simple.
Well,
briefly, do you think it's a good tool?
Briefly, horses have the same walk patterns as humans. So say, so you get like non-resistance training if they're sort of, if they have anything, you know, mentally wrong, nerves are wrong, the unknown that doctors can't pinpoint, that the horse will bring some sense of respite to the child. To the adult, they will. You may get children who can't walk, but you put them on a horse. They get to feel their legs without somebody telling them to stand up straight and all that good stuff because the horse is acting as their pivot, and also triggering the cells and the nerves in the legs to talk to the brain. So they get to feel. Yes, so when they get off the horse, I'm being very simplistic here. That they.
Oh, no, I like that because you're giving us a sense of how the nerves carry so much information and you're just trying to design how it goes. I like that.
So it's getting, and they get off the horse and they can, their posture might have improved and they haven't like done weight training or anything like that because the nerves have been gently moved and some electric impulses have happened. And even like you've got a kid that doesn't know how to be a cat on a horse. I remember still picture this day. And the therapist had her on the horse, four-legged like a cat. And I'm on the side. And, you know, this was early days. And she said, in 3 weeks, this kid will be able to do that herself without us holding her in position. And true enough, in 3 weeks' time, she came for her lesson and she could become a cat and didn't have to be held up.
Wow. That's wonderful. Okay, before in the last 5 minutes, any more animal stories of talking about animals communicating? I don't want to go too far into autism because that's a whole discussion.
I had, when I was in, there was one in, I was at Bitterroot Ranch in Wyoming on yet another Tellington Touch training. This was for young horses. They had this vast mesa with probably 350 horses in it. And in an evening, we would go up and practice our T-touch skills if whoever was showed up and stood around. And this one lady, we saw this big iron gray, in other words, a dark gray horse. And he was out on his own, and this lady was of Wiccan sensibilities, and she went over there and did her ritual and saying how, you know, hello and bowing. And she discovered he was an Indian chief reincarnated to a horse. So so he could
wow.
so he could protect his people. Yeah, the chills are just going through me. So we
that's brilliant. Wasn't that a well-arranged kind of karmic return?
And when we went down in the morning, I mean, there's a lot more to the story than this, but I'm giving you the abridged version. We went down in the morning.
Sure.
We shared with the barn manager. So who was the big iron gray horse up there? And he stands on his own a lot. And she said, oh, that's Chief. He's called Chief. I mean, you can't make this stuff up.
I know.
When I left, the morning we left, the same group of people went back up there to see if any of our, you know, friends were there. And he was at the gate, not on his own anymore, but with people, with other horses, like a little cadre. And I said, I'm sorry, I had to leave. And this was... And I said, yeah, I'm sorry, I had to leave. And he actually, there was this big, big teardrop came down his eye. And through his throat, aww, he like croaked like he was sad. You know, like the human side trying to come through. Okay, we do that bit. I get on the plane and in like a half, in that half awake, half asleep moment, I get this whole vision of the battle that ensued on that mesa where he'd lost all his peeps. And it came out through, and I'm just being instantly shown this. And then as I'm being brought out of the vision, for the use of a better word, it's all like these eyes are closing, like camera lenses. You know, when you click a camera lens and it goes click, click, click. And there must have been about eight camera clicks. And then I realize I'm inside the horse's head and he's showing me through his sight.
Wow.
And that.
Wow, that must have been something. Talk about chills, eh?
And that gave me, okay, I've been here. I was with him. That's why he's sharing this. You know, that, and then I got to realize another horse story, which we don't have time for, but that tied into another part of my life.
We've got time. I can always make it a bit longer. So go ahead.
Well, no, there's a...
I would love to hear another horse story.
Well, this was... this is a bit of a shaggy dog story. So that's like a whole hour in itself. Basically, when I was growing up, I was like being thrust with horses, but I wasn't crazy about them. And but I got taken to the races one day in England and I discovered pedigrees and all their lineage. And that was my route. I discovered all these. And of course, old money called, when they bred horses, they named them after the gods or the Romans or the Greeks. You know, they were very educational. And my brain was just a sponge for all this stuff. And I'm about 10 at this point, maybe 12. And I'm discovering and all this stuff is like flooding in. And then I start doing the Greeks and the Romans at school. And here's the big kick. Mm-hmm. I already knew it because the horse, they were all, all in the horse pedigree. And so that.
Wow, that's amazing.
That pedigree thing just sort of opened up so much, and how word associates, you know, they name their horses with thought. So, you know, it was this word association all the time. It was very, and I go, oh, that's what that means. Oh, that's so-and-so's mother, because that's, you know, they had a filly and that's what they called the filly. Oh, and that's so-and-so's daughter or sister or whatever.
So I didn't how fascinating
what at all at learning the Romans, the Greeks, because it was the pedigrees all like laid out like a lineage. Yeah.
Well, now we do have to end, unfortunately, but I'm fascinated by it's a really a cellular journey you've been through with all of this, and it's only just beginning. I mean, you've got so much more to do yet. Hey?
Perhaps, yes. Yeah.
Well, it seems like it's opening in the sense that you're understanding a lot more More and more about consciousness, whether it's human or animal, and what we share. It seems like you've got a whole parade of things coming to you.
Yes, this is true. Yes.
I'm excited for
it is.
You.
It's not, I'm just laughing of a day last week when somebody told me their donkey had actually been an alligator in a previous lifetime. And I could actually see the shape of the alligator in the current donkey's head profile.
You know? Isn't that an odd combination? No, that's funny.
And the donkey stood there going, oh, this is lovely. I love my ears being rubbed, especially there. Yes. And I can see this whole like alligator, and I thought you could just turn around and snap my hand off, you know, in a lifetime.
Now tell me one final thing: do animals have a sense of humor?
Oh yes, big time. Yeah, big time. I had board horse one day when we were stood in a pony club clinic, and there was this little dot on the horse, and we were stood in line forever, and this horse looks at me, and he literally starts picking the skin off my hand, you know, like with his teeth. Now, how big is a horse's mouth and teeth? And he, and he literally
did it hurt?
Lifting the skin off my hand and letting it go.
Oh my gosh, really? But it didn't hurt you at all.
Yeah, and I'm looking at him another day when somebody was trying to put a bit in his mouth, and I was about to walk up to show them how to do it, and he just gave me a look as if to say, this is mine. And he made them do it. You know,
wow.
Because they were jamming the bit into his teeth, and he just said, you're not putting that thing in my mouth. You know, learn some manners. You know, that's what he was telling the kids.
I love that story. Well, thank you, Richard Newton. You're an amazing, amazing and inspiring kind of fella to talk to. And I'm grateful. And I know the animals, the horses and probably other animals, dogs, cats, whatever, birds, ravens.
Yep.
Are delighted to share with you this whole realm of consciousness we're on through various forms. So tell people how to get hold of you if they want to.
Well, you can email me at chard1 as in Richard, so that's CHARD with a number 1 at hotmail.com, or you can 650-773-5028, and that's
you do have some things up on Facebook. Quite a bit of
I have a lot of horsey type pictures in there. I'm not a great poster, but you can always leave a message, and I'm often sort of doing more of the work than doing. I'm not in love with tech, but I'm getting there with it.
Well, the thing is, people can find you if they want to, and that's what's really important.
Yeah.
But I'm also grateful that you had time to be with us on this, and perhaps we'll call you again soon if you feel like talking further.
Love to.
All right. Well, and this is Veronica Entwistle saying thank you to Richard Newton and all of you for listening to Paradigm Shifters. We'll speak again. Many blessings.